The House will come to order. We have a little bit of echo in here this morning. While we're getting facilities up here, please stand if you're able. The flag salute will be led by Representative Riley. Our opening ceremonies this morning. Is this volume okay? Great. Our opening ceremony this morning will be presented by Pastor Mike Tatlock, the pastor of Grace Chapel Church in Wilsonville, guest of Representative Wingard.
Thank you for this honor. Let's pray. Our Lord in heaven, you are sovereign above all sovereign powers. You're the author of life. You give wisdom to the wise. You give knowledge to the discerning. And you reveal deep and hidden things. Light dwells in you. Today, we gather in humility as we acknowledge our own human limitations. And I ask for your favor to be on these leaders, that you may empower them with hope and optimism, and that they would be filled with strength and courage, that they would be guided by truth and wisdom, that they may be inspired by honor and integrity. And I pray that they may lead in ways that are pleasing to you and a blessing to those they represent. Lord, I intercede on behalf of their families for their health, for their wellness, and I pray that you may protect them by your mercy and your power, and may they find your grace sufficient in all circumstances that lie ahead of them. And we now pray in your sovereign name, amen.
Thank you very much, Pastor Tatlock. Courtesies. And we've got a full agenda today, colleagues, so I would encourage us all to keep our courtesies as crisp and short as possible. Representative Wingard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I hope you will extend courtesies to Pastor Mike Tatlock, who just gave the sermon today. He's the lead pastor of Grace Chapel, located in Wilsonville. He grew up in Southern California and then lived for 12 years in Canada, where he attended a Prairie Bible College, got his graduate degree there as well. He currently works with several organizations in the Portland metropolitan area to help in the areas of poverty and hunger, homelessness, the environment, public school system, and health and wellness. He's recently just published his first book titled Faith in Real Life. He and his wife Bernadette have two young children and a dog named Duke. Folks, please welcome Pastor Tatlock.
Further courtesies. Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a number of honorary pages today. If you guys would please stand when I call your name. Marisol Martinez, we stand up. Marisol would like to be a teacher someday. And by the way, all of today's honorary pages are in Escada Junior High School. Clarissa Cavicha-Sedeya. Clarissa, her career goal is nothing less than to be president. Yvonne Kamal. Yvonne would like to be a pediatrician someday. And her cousin, Randy Kamal, would like to be a dentist working on children someday. Jordan Pinto. Jordan, a man after my own heart, someday aspires to be a lawyer. And Veronica Flores. Someday, Veronica would like to be a veterinarian. Please welcome them today. Thank you very much for your service in the Capitol.
Further courtesies, Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I, too, have a constituent from the Estacada Junior High. Ainele Paz is in the seventh grade. She's interested in soccer, basketball, culture club, and she wants to be a teacher.
We welcome all of our pages today. Thanks for your service to the House. Further courtesies, let's go to our moment in our sesquicentennial history. Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today's History Minute, I'm going to try and get it down to a minute, is adapted from an entry in the Oregon Encyclopedia written by Susan Stellis of Portland. Bobby the Wonder Dog, April 13th. Bobby the Wonder Dog of Silverton, Oregon. He was the canine hero in a story that in the 1920s became a national sensation. On a February day in 1924, the two-year-old Scotch Collie mix dog appeared on the doorstep of his owners, Mr. and Mrs. Frank Brazier. What amazed them was that they had not seen their dog since he disappeared 6 months earlier from a car trip in Indiana. Bobby, mangy, scrawny, feet worn to the bone, appeared to have walked back the entire way by himself. There's a lot more information that's going to be longer than a minute, so let me skip to the end. Bobby was a much-celebrated dog. He received medals, keys to cities, a jewel-studded harness, and a collar. He was a guest of honor at the Portland Home Show, where 40,000 people came to view him. He was given his own dog-sized bungalow. Upon his death in 1927, Bobby was buried with honors at the Oregon Humane Society. Portland's mayor gave the eulogy and later Rin Tin Tin laid a wreath at his grave. He is remembered in Silverton every May with a pet parade through town. I'm sure our colleague from the Christmas Tree District is the grand marshal of that parade. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Are there any further courtesies? Very good. The clerk will now open the voting system for the purpose of verifying a quorum. Representative Tomei is present. Representative Gilliam is present. Representative Widener is present. Representative Harker is present. Representative Krieger is present. Excuse Representative Galizio. All other members are present. Message from the governor.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the governor to inform you that he has approved and signed the following bills: House Bill 2190, 2056, 2257, 2258, 2259, and 2326.
Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you the Senate has passed Senate Bill 66, 113, 400, 444, 625. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you that he has signed Senate Bill 189. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you that he has signed Senate Bill 311.
First reading, memorials and resolutions.
HJM 21, urging Congress to change funding of veterans' health care from discretionary entitlement to permanent and direct entitlement. HJR 53, directing State Board of Higher Education to review potential for focusing higher education resources to assist state government.
Bills read for the first time were passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. Standing committee reports, the committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Special orders of business. The clerk will read the resolution.
HCR 6, congratulating Dave Frohmeyer for his leadership, public service, and accomplishments.
The question now arises upon final reading and adoption of HCR 6. Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I rise today in support of House Concurrent Resolution 6. This resolution is about congratulating Dave Frohmeyer, the current president of the University of Oregon, who will be retiring later this year. Dave Frohmeyer has been a champion of education in this state, has been a champion of the legislative process, has been a champion of the judicial process as Attorney General as well. He has done so much for this state that has gone unrecognized. And in my community, we really look to the U of O as not just a place for a quality education, but also as an economic driver for our community. with the University of Oregon receiving less per pupil distribution than any other universities in the state of Oregon, he has continued to grow its student body, has continued to grow its programs, and has continued to grow investment through philanthropic fundraising. All of these things are so important to not just our community, but to the state. He just completed the last philanthropic campaign, the state's largest, raising over $852 million. We oftentimes hear of the fundraising that goes on for our athletic department and our athletic Autzen Stadium and the basketball arena. But we should never forget that most of the philanthropic money goes towards education and the buildings that serve our educational institution, like the Knight Law School and the library, the Jordan Snitzer Art Museum, the Lillis Business Complex, the Student Recreation Center, three new student housing projects, and one that I'm particularly fond of is the Locay Center, which is a clearly unique endeavor in our state, where our educational institution is leveraging its public investment to bring in private industry to partner with, to help drive our economy when it comes to the nanoscience fields. It has truly been a great, great partnership, partnering with the likes of Invitrogen, which is now Life Sciences, Genentech, Intel, and I could go on and on. It is truly a unique opportunity that the University of Oregon, under Dave Frommeyer's leadership, has brought to this state. He was also a member of this House of Representatives. He's spent a tremendous amount of work on the Administrative Procedures Act. Many knew him as Mr. AP. He worked on good government and ethics laws, strengthening Oregon's public records and public meeting laws. He worked on a bill to require restaurants to have someone on hand who knows the Heimlich maneuver. President Frommeyer has also done many things across this nation as well. He has helped save countless lives in simple but important ways. He and his wife are founders of the Fanconi Anemia Research Fund Incorporated. He is the founding director of the National Marrow Donor Program, a fellow of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences. He is a magnum cum laude graduate from Harvard and a Rhodes Scholar. Oregon has surely been blessed to have Dave Frommeyer serving this state as a public servant and certainly as president of the University of Oregon. He has personally always been able to talk to everyone in our community about the issues, about the problems, about the disagreements that we come across. And he's always been able to bring people to the table and try to move not just the university, but the state of Oregon in a forward direction. I found it personally gratifying to be able to call him up, to talk to him about issues, whether they're at the University of Oregon or whether they're here in Salem. His knowledge, his personal integrity are unmatched of people I've met in this state. Colleagues, I hope you will join me in supporting this resolution. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Co-carrier, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to acknowledge that Dave Frommeyer is in the balcony this morning. Welcome to the House of Representatives. I want to talk about some of the other important milestones of the life of Dave Frommeyer. He is truly a remarkable Oregonian, graduated magna cum laude from Harvard, Rhodes Scholar, law degree from the University of California at Berkeley. He was eminently prepared when he became Attorney General of the state of Oregon and argued seven cases before the Supreme Court, six of which he won. These cases ranged from issues around double jeopardy, the Miranda ruling and the limitations to the Miranda ruling, laws involving hunting and fishing rights, an issue of an injury during a prison riot, and probably the most famous case having to do with unemployment compensation and the free exercise of religion claim for peyote use. All of those cases that I've described, then Attorney General Frohnmeyer won. He has been, he co-chaired the State Attorney General's task force and negotiating team in U.S. versus Exxon. He was selected by his peers to present oral arguments on appeal and prevailed on that oral argument, resulting in the distribution of $2.1 billion in indirect restitution to consumers throughout the states. He also, after that, he worked as one of the three national arbitrators in the distribution of $8.6 billion of bonus awards to states for strategic distributions in litigating and settling cases against the tobacco industry and allied interests. And this is after, during the time he was a president of the University of Oregon. He also supervised state litigation and participated in joint federal and state investigation and the prosecution of criminal acts coming from probably the most famous period of Oregon's history involving the Rajneesh commune in Central Oregon between 1983 and 1986, the largest criminal conspiracy in Oregon's history, which, as you know, led to the collapse of the commune and the deportation of its primary leader. He ran for governor in 1990, and it appeared as though he was going to win, except that there was a third-party candidate which siphoned votes away from him, and he ended up losing the race to Governor Roberts. During all of this time, while he had a remarkable public career, including, of course, the most famous part, during his many years as president of the University of Oregon, during all of that time, Lynn and Dave Frohnmeyer were dealing with the personal tragedy of the genetic difficulties in their family with Franconia anemia. And as always, they continue to be leaders in dealing with every issue that they faced in their lives as leaders of the Franconia Anemia Research Fund, and have continued to be active in the research and in the work on that issue involving the deaths of two of their daughters. And in spite of that, he was able to produce the enormous public record that you see. It is with great honor, colleagues, that I ask you to support this resolution. And as a thank you to Dave Frohnmeyer, I do not believe that we have seen the last of him. I don't know what his next endeavor will be, but whatever it is, it will be wonderful and for the benefit of Oregon. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Holvey, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just wanted to say thank you, Dave, and I hope that he does return to this chamber where he can be given the privileges of the floor when he's no longer president of the University of Oregon, and I wish both him and his wife, Lynn, future happiness. Thank you very much.
Those who are of the opinion that the resolution should be adopted will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. H.C.R. 6, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. And we would like to we do want to express our gratitude to President Frohmeyer. Sometimes, colleagues, when we have resolutions, the person being honored would be down in the side aisle. President Frohmeyer, at least for the next few months, is not allowed down in the side aisle, but we look forward to having you back down there and even back on this floor as a special guest in the future. Congratulations. Representative Chris Edwards, for what purpose are you in the queue?
Mr. Speaker, I return unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies.
Representative Chris Edwards requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules and return to order of courtesies. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and colleagues. Please join me in welcoming two groups of students from my district in Junction City from Territorial Elementary. We have Mrs. Wharton's fifth grade class and Mrs. Kuhlman's fourth grade class, I believe. So thank you. Welcome to your capital, and I look forward to talking with you all here in a little bit.
Colleagues, any further courtesies while we're back at courtesies? Propositions and motions. First reading of House bills.
House Bill 3472, relating to fees collected by Secretary of State, appropriate money, prescribing an effective date, and providing for revenue raising that requires approval by a three-fifths majority. House Bill 3473, relating to student voters and declaring emergency. House Bill 3474, relating to garnishments. House Bill 3475, relating to apprenticeship standards for apprentice electricians.
Bills read for the first time. We're passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 5001, relating to financial administration of the Oregon Board of Accountancy and declaring an emergency. House Bill 5029, relating to financial administration of the State Marine Board and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2059, relating to health professional regulatory boards. House Bill 2255, relating to manufactured dwelling park nonprofit cooperatives. House Bill 2369, relating to motor vehicles. House Bill 2371, relating to privacy of identification documents. House Bill 2393, relating to sheriffs. House Bill 2405, relating to services that use Internet protocol. House Bill 2470 relating to dogs. House Bill 2704 relating to public employee retirement and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2714 relating to aquatic invasive species and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2763 into performance of agricultural goods. House Bill 2778 relating to injured state workers and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2794 relating to health benefit plan coverage of human papillomavirus vaccine. House Bill 2804 relating to floor retail sales. House Bill 2817 relating to for hire carriers. House Bill 2972 relating to sex offender registration and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3295 relating to juveniles.
Bills read for the second time were passed the third reading calendar. Consent calendar. The clerk will read the bill in a short summary.
Senate Bill 163 relating to nursing assistance provides right to contested case hearing to dispute finding by Department of Human Services.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 163A. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Kennemer, how do you vote? Kennemer votes aye. Representative Hanna, how do you vote? Hanna votes aye. Representative Krieger, how do you vote? Krieger votes aye. Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Thatcher votes aye. Senate Bill 163A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House bills. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2227, relating to destination resorts.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2227A. Representative Dolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Good morning, colleagues. I ask you to think with me about what it is that Oregonians need from us as their elected representatives. Since this bill is about land use, we could focus our attention on what they need from us in land use issues, but I think the question applies more generally than that. In this year, in this session, it's reasonable for Oregonians to expect us to take a jobs-friendly approach to everything we do. to nurture a partnership between what we do at the state level and our partners in local government to make sure that they can be nimble and flexible in responding to the needs of their local communities. And finally, Oregonians should be able to expect from us to truly believe that we are representing their best interests in the decisions we make. Today I bring you House Bill 2227 because I think it meets all three of those standards, and it is why I am asking you to join me in supporting it. This bill is directly addressing an urgent need to keep jobs for Oregonians and to create an atmosphere where there can be new jobs. Three sectors are affected by this issue: our agriculture sector, our forest product sector, and our tourism sector. And on all three counts, I recommend this bill to you because it is good for jobs in all three of those. In 2006, there were 76,000 jobs directly relating to agriculture and over 167,000 jobs in indirect connection with agriculture. This is one out of every 12 working Oregonians employed because our state protects farmland, protects farms, protects farming. We have similar impressive numbers in our wood products and forest products sector. These are our economic heritage, and they are something that we should be dedicated to protecting. But let's also talk about jobs in tourism. Tourism can be effective when we allow the industry to flourish in an environment that does not conflict with our other robust economic sectors, where we can help our county governments be more flexible, respond to local needs, help communities that are suffering in this economic time, as well as communities who have seen a decline in their economic base over the last 20 years. And by giving more flexibility to the Department of Land Conservation and Development, and let's remember, we are talking about a department half of whose purpose for being is to help develop uses of the land so that they can be productive for our economy. So that gets to the second point that this bill accomplishes. It creates a lot more flexibility than current law gives to local governments. Since Oregon became the first state with a statewide land use system, there have been two ways to facilitate the siting and development of a destination resort. One is through the normal comprehensive plan process, through an exception through that process, and several successful resorts have been cited that way. But a little more than 20 years ago, the legislature responded to local needs and requests from counties and communities to provide a little more flexibility. And so we created a separate section of statute that gives essentially a shortcut for the siting and development of a destination resort in order to facilitate our tourism business. And many destination resorts that are flourishing today have been sited and built under that new provision. But it's been more than 20 years since the legislature has taken a look at that section of our law. And when we did that, through the course of an interim public hearing, as well as four public hearings in this body, and several work sessions, we determined that there was indeed a need to update that, that we needed to clarify the protection of farmland, specifically as it relates to large irrigation districts, and we needed to clarify how we were protecting forest land, specifically in the area of extremely high fire hazard, which not only endangers life and property, but costs forest landowners a great deal of money and endangers their ability to have productive use of their forest lands. And so we are proposing to update that statute today. And we are proposing to update it in the two ways I talked about, clarifying that when we are irrigating land, that the top priority for that scarce water resource is for farming, for productive farm use, so that we can protect those jobs, those 167,000 jobs that I talked about. And when it comes to fire, high hazard fire, extremely high hazard fire, that we are protecting forest land from the added impetus, the added kindling, if you will, of destination resorts located on very, very vulnerable land. But this is something that seems to have been missed as people have looked at this bill. We balance those two aspects of the bill with a substantial loosening of the Department of Land Conservation and Development's flexibility to help local communities site destination resorts. The statute that was added 20 years ago included a lot of very specific restrictions in statute that have been also consummated into department rule. So they exist in two places now. But because they're in statute, when the Land Conservation and Development Commission wants to be more flexible, current law restricts them from that flexibility. Because while they can adjust or make a trade-off in their own rules, they can't waive or adjust something that we as the legislature has codified in statute. So I want to make sure people are paying attention to that important section of this bill. It removes from statute a lot of old, somewhat antiquated, but very restrictive language, and instead gives to the Land Conservation and Development Commission not only the ability to be more flexible with counties, something we have heard quite a bit about, but also the incentive and direction from the legislature that that's what we expect them to do. That if they can work with a county that is struggling with inordinately high unemployment, or a county that has seen its natural resources employment base shrink over the last 20 years, that we can lend them a helping hand in helping expand their tourism job base. And that's what this bill does. And finally, colleagues, I started by saying that Oregonians should expect that we are listening to their needs and that we are giving them an opportunity to shape the rules and the laws under which they live. And we have been more than successful in achieving that objective in the way we bring this bill to you today. That process began, as I said, with public hearings during the interim, in which our interim committee heard from over 100 people at a public hearing, and over 40 of them testified in favor of giving more flexibility and more leeway to help them expand their job base, to help them take advantage of the tourism that the state as a whole is trying to advocate. During this session, your Land Use Committee traveled to Central Oregon to hold a hearing in Redmond on this bill. We held 3 additional public hearings on this bill in Salem, and we held 3 work sessions.
Representative Garrett Yields.
Thank you. In all of those, we invited every interested party to propose their ideas, their suggestions, their changes, their amendments, their tweaks, their modifications to this bill. And we entertained many of them. You'll probably hear during the testimony today that the bill before you incorporates the -10 amendment, And I think that's reflective of how much care went into the development of this bill, because we did, in fact, hear from many, many interested parties. And we made adjustments. We incorporated most of the recommendations that were made to us, but we left some people who wanted more restrictions somewhat unsatisfied with this bill. And we left some people who wanted fewer restrictions on land use requirements a little disappointed. But we came to a common ground in the middle that satisfies a broad cross-section of people and achieves all of the objectives that Oregonians should count on us to give them. I enthusiastically bring this bill to your attention and encourage you to join me in supporting it. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Questions of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, I will. Thank you.
She does.
To the good representative from Southwest Portland, and as the House Committee on Land Use Chair, you talked about your meetings that you held. I spent the weekend looking and reviewing the tapes on those. Can you sort of give us an idea of how long? I know the public hearing in Redmond was 2.5 hours. Could you give us an idea of how long the public hearing and the work sessions were on this bill, please?
Thank you for that question, Representative. We held most of the hearings that we held on this bill. This bill was the only bill on the agenda, so that meant that it covered approximately the full 2 hours that were allotted.
That's not true.
Representative Wisnett?
Follow-up question for the good representative from Southwest Portland.
Further questions? Does the carrier yield?
Yes, thank you.
She does.
Good representative, you talked a little bit about the amendments. Could you sort of help the body look at these amendments that were submitted and what was rejected and why and what was accepted and why?
The bill originally required changes that would have made the department's authority more expansive than the committee was comfortable with. And in the course of several amendments, we modified that in order to make sure that we were giving flexibility, particularly to our local government partners, but not giving unbridled authority to the department. And we ended up with giving the department, essentially not giving the department new authority at all, that they, I mean, we basically left their current rulemaking authority in place.
Representative Wisnett.
Another question of the carrier.
Further question of the carrier, does the carrier yield?
Fine with me.
She does.
Good representative, I'm sorry, I thought some of the amendments that I looked at and reviewed talked about clarifying some language in Section 6. Some of the amendments talked about a study group and by this body. The amendments I looked at, could you comment on that, please?
I don't have the full stack of amendments, Representative. Is there a particular, could you clarify your question for me, please?
Representative Wisnett?
Mr. Speaker, I'll pass on the question, please.
Do you want to speak then to the bill?
No, I have another question.
Okay.
I'll pass on that bill question. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Good representative.
I'm sorry. So you have an additional question for the carrier, is that
yes,
correct?
Yes, I do.
Additional questions, the carrier yield?
Yes.
She does.
Good representative from Southwest Portland. You also talked about in your opening comments on the bill that you established work groups. Could you tell us how many different work groups? When looking at the tape, I heard about a work group that contained three members of the committee. But for what were the work groups doing, and were they bipartisan?
Thank you for that question. At several times, we invited input from all members of the committee. We invited input from all interested people who had testified, including groups who spend a lot of time in this building, as well as groups who came as regular citizens. We had a series of different work group efforts as the bill evolved, as we got it closer and closer to a point where we could accommodate as many concerns as possible.
Clarification or another question on the carrier?
Further questions? The carrier yield?
Yes.
She does.
Good representative, you didn't address the bipartisan. Were they bipartisan?
We included input from one of the Republican members on the committee as well. He ended up not supporting the bill, but he submitted ideas to our changes. And, in fact, four out of the six amendments that he requested were incorporated in the final bill and are included in what's on your desk today.
Thank you.
Representative Wisdom.
Another question of the carrier.
Further question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I can stand as long as you can.
She does.
Thank you, good representative. Good representative, you talked about the economic situation in our state. Could you please comment on why the committee, and it was proposed in three amendments, I understand, that we should study this issue and not reach a final decision on this bill at this time with the reason and the economic times we're in? And could you comment on why you we rushed to this decision today and it was not unanimous in your committee?
Absolutely, Representative, and thank you for that question. The bill does two things. It immediately creates more flexibility, more leeway, more responsiveness, and a nimble approach for our local governments so that they can respond today, now, actually January 1st, because the bill is prospective. But we wanted to give them tools to respond to needs and urgencies right now. And simultaneously, we incorporated exactly the suggestion you're making. We said to the department, you know, you ought to look and see if there are other things that are getting in the way of this kind of development that are making it harder for our department to work with local governments to solve their problems. And if there are, bring additional ideas back to us, either in 2010 or in 2011. But your committee, or at least a majority of the members of your committee, didn't think it was fair for local governments to have to wait until we did that study before they could pursue a more flexible approach.
Last question, the carrier.
Additional questions? Does the carrier yield?
You bet.
She does.
Good representative from Southwest Portland. Do you believe that this bill will be a historical achievement for the 75th legislative session?
Thank you, Representative. I think this is a good bill. I think it helps us fulfill our responsibility and our promise to work to solve problems for our landowners and the people who are working or need work. But I don't think it will go down in history as one of the landmark bills out of this session. It's a good bill, but it's not on a par with a transportation package that we're going to do and some other really important bills that we will do this session.
Mr. Speaker, I have a question for the good representative from Lake Oswego.
Question of Representative Garrett. Does Representative Garrett yield? He does.
Good representative from Lake Oswego and his House Committee on Land Use Vice Chair, you heard and received a lot of testimony we've heard on this bill. Could you please advise us, this chamber, who was not at those meetings, was all the testimony in support of this bill?
Representative, my recollection is that a significant majority of the testimony was supportive of the bill, but I wouldn't say it was unanimous.
Follow-up. Another question of the good representative.
Further question of Representative Garrett. Do you yield? He does.
Good representative from Lake Oswego. All of us did not receive, as I stated, the testimony on this bill, which you did. I've listened to the testimony of the people from North Klamath County who testified in Redmond and supported the Crescent Creek Resort. Could you summarize some of that testimony?
Yes, I can, I think. At the hearing that we held in Redmond, a number of people came from North Klamath County, Representative, and Gilchrist in particular. They, I think, were under the mistaken belief that this bill would actually affect the ability of the Crescent Creek Resort to proceed, and we were able to assure them that that's not the case. That resort will not be affected by this legislation.
Another question.
Representative Wisnett. Further question of Representative Garrett?
Yes.
Do Do you yield? He does.
Good representative, but when I heard that tape, there was very emotional plea for jobs and jobs and jobs and to save our community. Would you support, would you concur with my interpretation of that testimony?
I think that was the nature of the concern they expressed, yes.
Representative Wisnett?
Another question of the good representative from Lake Oswego.
Further question, do you yield, Representative Garrett? He does.
Good representative, with the current economic session, please comment on why the option of studying this issue is not reasonable. In other words, why rush to a decision today, which I suspect will not be unanimous?
Well, Representative, I don't think I can improve on the answer to that same question that was given by the carrier. I think there are pressing concerns voiced by agriculture in eastern Oregon. I think in practical effect, what this bill does is ask the department to evaluate and, as may be necessary, update current rules and goals related to destination resorts. So the practical impact of this may very well be a study bill, in addition to giving local governments more flexibility, as noted by the carrier.
Mr. Speaker, I have a question of the good representative from Central Coast.
Question of Representative Cowan. Does Representative Cowan yield?
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
She does.
Good representative from the Central Coast, who is a member of the Committee on Land Use, and also has the Oregon's first designation resort in your House district. Would you briefly describe the positive economic impact of the Salishan Resort on your House district?
Thank you, and thank you to the good representative from rural Deschutes County. I appreciate you having shared your questions with me a little bit in advance. And I would also offer the thanks of my tourism community, who are also are always very happy to have me have the opportunity to tout the beautiful Central Oregon coast and the opportunities afforded at Salishan Lodge. It's also a good employer and a boon to our community. But, you know, you may be able to answer this question better than I, because you actually live in Sun River, which is a resort that was built by John Gray, the developer of both Salishan and Sun River. But the final thing that I think I'd like to note is that these resorts were both built well in advance of the ORS 197 that was developed later, so nothing in House Bill 2227 would apply to either of them.
Representative Wisnett.
Another question of the good representative from Central Coast.
Representative Cowan, do you yield for an additional question?
Sure.
She does.
Good representative, please provide this chamber your committee or please describe any negative comments on your House district by adding Salishan Resort to in your district, by having Salishan Resort in your district.
Well, good representative, sadly, I didn't get to Lincoln County until 1988, which was after Salishan was built, so I don't really have a good comparative of the pre-Salishan era, I guess, as opposed to the post. I will tell you one of the concerns that I have as a former Lincoln County commissioner and as someone who's worked in emergency preparedness for a long time is those multi-million dollar homes out there on Salishan Spit give me real heartache and nightmares when I consider the possibility of what would happen to them should we experience a tsunami on the coast.
Another question of the good representative.
An additional question of Representative Cowan. Do you yield?
Yes, I do.
She does.
Good representative, please provide the chamber your committee comments on Section 4C of this bill.
Good representative, I had that question, and I've referred back to Section 4, and there isn't a C, and I really don't have any idea what you're referring to.
Clarification. Representative.
Yeah. Good representative, I was discussing the providing housing for the resort workers. I thought that was the right paragraph.
Representative Cowan?
Section 4 refers to a goal relating to recreational needs and rules implementing that goal.
Representative Wisnett?
On page 6 of the bill.
Is this an additional question of Representative Cowan?
That's clarification of the question. Is that, or no?
Representative Cowan, do you continue to yield?
Certainly.
She does. Representative Wisnett?
Representative, it's on page 6 of the bill. Section 6, 6C. six, or excuse me, it's Section 6, Paragraph 4C. Provide for workforce housing on-site and off-site for individuals working at the resort.
Oh, okay, thank you. My comments during committee, when we were talking about workforce housing, as I recall them, probably clarified the amendment when it suggested that we change that to be able to provide for, and I was clarifying that that meant if a resort is hiring locally and people already have housing, then that would be what that amendment referred to, and that would meet the obligation.
Representative Wisnett.
Last question for the good representative from Central Coast.
Additional question? Does the Representative Cowan yield?
One more time.
She does.
Good representative, I've asked the other people on the committee this question. With the current economic recession, please comment on why the option of studying this issue is not reasonable. In other words, why rush to a decision today, which I suspect will not be unanimous?
Good representative, my perspective on this bill is that it really is predominantly a study bill. If you refer back to Section 2, it says that the Land Conservation and Development Commission may, not shall, and it talks about evaluating some of the various impacts and updating those. I think that's important, particularly some of the look at emergency perspectives and concerns that we might have, which is one of the reasons that I supported the piece around wildfires, and certainly I think that's important to evaluate if you're looking at something that's built in the woods and any other issues that have come up since the statute went in place in 1987 or 88 or something like that.
Thank you.
Mr.
Speaker, I have questions for the good representative from Central and East Salem.
Questions for Representative Clem. Do you yield?
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
He does.
Good representative, do you have any designation resorts in your House district?
Thank you for the question. I do not have any destination resorts because this 197 statute makes it illegal for a district within, or excuse me, there may not be a destination resort within 24 air miles of an urban growth boundary with an existing population of 100,000 or more. This statute was designed only for districts like yours, Representative, not mine.
Representative Wisnett.
Another question of the good representative.
Further question of Representative Clem. Do you yield?
I do.
He does.
Good representative from Central and East Salem. I have constituents who are very concerned about the restriction of mapping resorts within 3 miles of a high-value crop area and on a site that is within an irrigation district organized under ORS Chapter 545. Please explain why we have that in there as high-value crop area and discuss how this definitionally adversely affects eastern Oregon land. And please explain why within an irrigation district was added as a restriction, which is not in the current bill.
Thank you, a good representative. The high-value crop area definition is from existing law. It was placed there in 1987. It's been on the books since then. This particular provision was actually what got me interested in this whole issue. I was requested by constituents from Jefferson County and Crook County to come take a look at how the current protections for farming are too weak, and they're concerned about, particularly in Powell Butte area. So I chaired a one-man subcommittee on destination resorts. We met October 15th. About 150 folks came, about 95% of them were opposed to Crook County's destination resort map. The county commissioners had repealed it earlier in the day, actually, so they were happy about that. But these were all farmers who were concerned that the current high-value crop area language in existing law does not protect them. Irrigation districts is the new addition on the second part of your question that you referenced. And irrigation districts were added because I believe it was the sense of the committee that irrigation districts first and foremost should serve agricultural needs, not second or first homes for individuals who want to place destination resorts in irrigation districts.
Representative Wisnett.
I have another question for the good representative from Central and East Salem.
Additional question of Representative Clem. Do you yield?
I do.
He does.
Good representative, reviewing the tapes on your meetings, there was discussion about how much land this was going to affect. I believe the director of Department of Land Conservation Development came in and gave you a small map. Can you please advise this body who doesn't have about how much land in Deschutes County is exempt from a possible resort mapping due to these restrictions?
Thank you, Representative. The amount that would be affected, I think, would be largely the irrigation districts, because I don't know that the portion about fire was the main concern of folks who have spoken with me from Deschutes County. And I think that's where the big overlay issue was, irrigation districts versus not having irrigation districts under current law. The irrigation districts can, of course, be amended to take out any destination resorts, then they'd no longer be covered under this bill. But under current irrigation districts, without them amending them, I do not know the percentage, but it is whatever irrigation districts are in Deschutes County that fall under the bill, that's the amount. Now, what I would say is I did review, just so I could have some better information, a Ben Bulletin article about a Deschutes County process to look into destination resorts. The quote from the planner, assistant planner in Deschutes County, was after having four public hearings with hundreds of people testify, the consensus is we should place no more destination resorts in Deschutes County. That was a Deschutes County assistant planner said that was the consensus from the public in Deschutes County. So we're not going to go that far with this bill, but it sounds like Deschutes County is reviewing their map because of what they heard from the constituents from Deschutes County.
Another question, Mr. Speaker. Of the
Representative Wisdom, further question of Representative Clem. Do you yield?
I do.
He does.
Again, good representative, in reviewing the tapes, you had concern in committee meeting about Section 6, Paragraph 4C. Could you discuss that with the chamber?
Thank you, Representative. This is the portion that has the phrasing about the workforce at a destination resort should have housing provided for them. That's the section in question. And what the chair clarified for us for legislative intent and on the record purposes, it does not say provide housing. It says provide for housing. And the representative from the Central Coast also affirmed that providing for means meaning there's some housing in the area, but it does not in fact mean that the resort would have to actually go build new housing. If it said the word provide, it would. I was satisfied once I heard the explanation from the chair that provide for does not place an undue barrier on the resorts.
Representative Wisdom.
Mr. Speaker, to the bill.
To the bill.
First, honorable colleagues, this is a very important bill to me, and I hope you'll understand that every question I ask was given ahead of time to these people, and these people are on your committee that are bringing this bill for us today. Honorable colleagues, I rise in strong opposition to House Bill 2227. Is that too many twos? Colleagues, I find this bill to be anti-growth, anti-jobs, and anti-local control. Also, I strongly oppose taking away from the legislature the responsibility for designation resort policy and giving it to a state agency. I, as do at least three members of the House Land Use Committee, support studying in detail our current policies to create designation resort policy changes necessary. In our current economic recession, there is no reason to rush to enact a social engineering policy of this bill before you today, which I submit discourages any further resorts in Oregon. Let me explain in case you haven't looked at your bill. Section 1 of this bill states that the Legislative Assembly finds that it is the policy that the Legislative Assembly finds that it is the policy of the state to promote Oregon as a vacation designation and to encourage tourism as a viable segment of our state's economy. Paragraph B, there is a need to provide year-round designation resort accommodations to attract visitors and encourage them to stay longer. The establishment of designation resorts will provide jobs for Oregonians and contribute to the state's economic development. Please note that this bill deletes the statement, it is a difficult and costly process to site and establish designation resorts in rural areas of this state. This deletion is true, but we're taking it out. And this proposed bill in front of you will make it more difficult and costly, if not impossible, to site and map resorts. The present bill in front of you states, the siting of designation resort facilities is a statewide concern. However, the bill delegates the policy to a state agency, not elected officials. Mr. Speaker, request permission to use the visual.
Representative Wisnett requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules for purpose of using a visual aid. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Wisnett.
Honorable colleagues, we're going to put a map in the back of the room, so you might want to get up and stretch your legs, and you can look at this map. I ask questions of the people during my question session. According to Deschutes County Commissioner Luke, Section 5C of this bill will eliminate over 50% of Deschutes County's mapped designation resort eligible properties as shown on this map because of the irrigation district paragraph. That I'm sorry that the committee members were not aware of that. Finally, please look at Section 6.4C, which reads, the county shall require that designation resort provide for workforce housing on-site or off-site for individuals working at the resort. I hope everyone heard that. We're going to provide for housing. It's my opinion that this is a good social engineering proposal, but appears to be a tremendous expense to the developer and a difficult task for the planning process. It would probably be a roadblock for any developer, but maybe that was the objective. A -10 amendment, which was rejected, required the developer to demonstrate that workforce housing for individuals working at the resort is available. That seems a more reasonable requirement. Deschutes County also questions how to implement this policy. And as I tried to bring out in my questions, members of the committee were also concerned about this language. When you say provide for, to me that means you're going to provide housing. According to a Bend land use attorney, House Bill 2227 repeals the statutory framework for designation resorts established by the Oregon legislature. The existing laws were adopted and refined as a result of many years of experience and reflect the collective wisdom of the legislature.
Representative Gilman yields.
Thank you, Representative. That experience and wisdom should not be swept aside without prior study as a full understanding of the impact on the new statutory criteria proposed in House Bill 2227. This bill effectively repeals comprehensive plan designation resort maps adopted by counties by adopting new criteria for lands to be eligible for resort development and by repealing the part of the law that allows counties to periodically update maps. The mapping process, even though we've taken it out of the bill, is expensive and extensive. As a result of an extensive public involvement process, as required by statewide goals 1 and 2, it should not be discarded. Next, colleagues, look at your physical analysis from LFO. It states the Department of Land Conservation and Development will accept from the legislature the responsibility of defining resort policy without legislation and even within their existing resources. Then they state, but if you want us to really pursue this, one of the good representatives in their question said it's permissive, the LCDC may. That's a strange directive. We're changing all of our, giving them responsibility for all of our policy, but they may do it. They don't have to do it. But LCDC says if we do it, we're going to need at least $110,902 and one-fourth of an FTE. Boy, that one FTE guy is going to be busy. And then the Fish and Wildlife weighs in and says they know they're going to need $106,481 for a half of a natural resource specialist, three. I think that totals about $200,000 fiscal, but this bill was not referred to Ways and Means. Remember, I guess we're counting on LCDC may do this work. Colleagues, please remember, I represent rural Deschutes County, the resort county. I represent Sun River, Eagle Crest, Pronghorn, Crosswater, Caldera Springs, Tethro, Seventh Mountain, and Thornburg. I live in Sun River, where I have owned since 1990. Sun River Resort is a worldwide visitor resort, which is a valuable financial and social contributor to Deschutes County citizens and community. I testified at the March 12th committee hearing, outlined my understanding and concerns and disappointments with the bill. There are many others who testified in opposition to the bill and offered suggestions and comments. From my view, looking at the tapes this weekend, the public testimony was about equal in support and opposition. I listened to most of the testimony and reviewed all the written testimony presented to the committee. And if you had listened to the passionate presentation of the many people from North Klamath County begging the committee to not stop the proposed Crescent Creek Resort Range Resort, I believe you would have understood the value of designation resorts to rural communities which have lost their timber industries to the spotted owl. It is my opinion that most testimony and support came from environmental groups, from not-in-my-backyard citizens, and from the Friends of the Metolius. Some opponents also expressed concerns about the passage of the bill which established authority for the Department of Land Conservation Development to refine this designation resort policy without legislation. There are many amendments submitted to the bill. Three recommended the study first. And that's what I'm asking today. Let's turn this down and support a study. The committee, on a 5-3 vote, has provided you a bill which will stop designation resorts and takes the decision for resorts away from the county to a state agency. Why take the decision for resorts away from local people and give it to a state agency? Let me tell you something. We talked about people from Crook County opposing designation resorts, some of the testimony you heard today. Members, Crook County passed a bill placing a moratorium on designation resorts. That's great. The system worked. The people spoke. Why kill designation resorts now? Why now, in this economy? I doubt there's money to fund any new designation resorts. Let's study our current policy and adjust it.
Representative Cameron yields.
Thank you, Representative. And listen to this carefully, colleagues. Why kill designation resorts when the area with the most potential for resorts and very little potential for agriculture has the highest unemployment rates in the state? Listen to this, colleagues. Crook County, 20.7%. That's people. That's not just a number. That's families, not just a number. Jefferson County has 18.9%. Deschutes County, 16.1%. These are unadjusted rates. As someone with frontline knowledge of resorts and as elected official of resorts, I would have appreciated a seat at the table in some of these work groups discussing the bill, which I believe is a death sentence for designation resorts and the future of some of these rural areas. Listen to those people from Klamath County. It's their future. I want to summarize some of the economic impacts about designation resorts in Oregon. You need to know this. We're in a recession. We're short billions of dollars. From a March 2007 report which looked at 8 resorts, the resorts employ over 2,000 with a payroll of over $54 million, which averages over $26,000 per employee. The report identified 219 industries which benefit directly from proximity to the resorts, and they employ 1,300 workers of a total payroll of over $31 million. Listen to this number, colleagues. The 2007 Deschutes County property value of the 5 major resorts is over $3 billion. That's a B. The yearly property tax for education and other county services is almost $29 million. In addition, in 2007, Deschutes County collected room taxes of over $3.5 million, and 3.1 of that came from designation resorts. You're going to, maybe you'll hear about the situation of permanent residents. Sun River Resort has less than 20% full-time residents. Black Butte has less than 17. Listen to this fact. Black Butte Ranch pays almost $7 million in property taxes. It has 17 students. That's a pretty bang for the buck. Sun River and Black Butte have their own police and fire departments. Again, let me remind you about the unemployment rates, people, families, faces. Central Oregon, 20% in Crook, 18% in Jefferson, 16% in Deschutes. Central Oregon has lost its primary industry of wood products in the 1970s, and you, the state leaders, encourage tourism in Central Oregon as a replacement. According to a land use lawyer in Bend, tourism and designation resorts are important contributors to the local economy and tax base used to operate government services. The adoption of this bill would effectively prohibit any new resorts developed in Deschutes County. It will make it more difficult for the county to recover when the nation's economy improves. It would also discourage long-term investment in land by creating an unstable regulatory environment. I truly believe the bill as written will stop any future resorts in Central Oregon. We already have two cities in my district in Central Oregon on the economic depressed list. Remember, the purpose of this bill was to promote Oregon as a vacation destination and encourage tourism as a valuable segment of this economy. I could have asked members of the committee why no one from the Oregon Tourism Commission testified. Todd Davis says no one testified from the Oregon Tourism Commission. They are participating in any of the work groups. I assume you know that Oregon spends millions per year promoting tourism and advertising Oregon's resorts and recreational activities. Even Governor Tom McCall's famous billboard encouraged Californians to visit but not move here. House Bill 2227 will tear down that billboard. Last year, the good representative who's not here on the floor from Central Coast mentioned John Gray. John Gray was honored last year by the Architect Foundation of Oregon for his contributions to the built environment in Oregon. Mr. Gray developed the Shalishan and Sun River resorts. He did not just develop land, he improved it. He built Sun River over an abandoned Army Corps of Engineers World War II Army training camp.
Representative Gilliam yields.
Thank you, Representative. We can still create environmental friendly resorts like John Gray advocates for, but not if we make it financially impossible or just plain impossible. In summary, I've given you what I hope was convincing arguments to oppose this bill. I believe this bill will destroy any future designation resorts and thus will continue to keep Central Oregon economically depressed. I do believe this bill is anti-jobs, anti-growth, anti-local control of land use decisions, plus it delegates legislative responsibility to a state agency, which I do not agree with. I hope I've convinced you that designation resorts are a key industry for Central Oregon, and that before we destroy any new growth, let's study the policy which was the original concept behind this bill and recommend changes to develop environmental friendly resorts without any negative impacts on communities. Why rush to destroy another Oregon industry? I urge you to reject this bill and let's study the current policy on designation resorts during the interim. There's no need to take this policy away from elected officials and no need to rush to kill resorts and future jobs. The Bend Bulletin editorial on your desk, the final statement in that editorial is, some designation resorts may be bad, but in these parts, the good ones have enriched government, provided jobs, and attracted the kind of folks and businesses that the region desperately needs. Please vote yes for jobs and no on HB 2227. And friends, let's not be remembered as the legislators who killed designation resorts.
Further discussion, Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I'm not sure why Oregon or this legislature would want to pass House Bill 2227. In my mind, after reading, you've heard testimony, if you read it carefully, it does, in fact, give an agency the ability to stop destination resorts, and I question whether you want to do that. I personally do not have a lot of confidence in the commission or the agency. Recall when 49 passed, we gave the agency 7 new employees to expedite those 49 claims. You want to know how many they got through in the last 18 months? Zero, far as I know, and I tried to check on that this morning. I have a card here which you all got. You're invited Sunday, April 19, 2009. As a distinguished member of the Oregon Legislature, you and your guests are invited to attend the opening night reception and award ceremony at the 25th anniversary celebration of the 2009 Oregon Governor's Conference on Tourism. How can you vote for this and say you support that? A destination resort right now is in a planning stage and well on its way in Curry County. It's going to be a golf complex adjacent to the ocean. It's going to have housing, shops, restaurant, or lodging, I should say, and would be a great economic boom over the next 2-3 years that they would be building it and then for after. I would like to talk to you a little bit, not so much about the bill, but what this bill could stop, and that was what really concerns me. The good representative from the Dunes, Representative Roblin, and I have abandoned dunes in our district. Some of you have been there, and I can guarantee you every lobbyist that's in this building has been there more than once if they're a golf enthusiast, and they get there any way that they can finagle a trip out of their company to pay for it. Bandon Dunes was built just north of Bandon on land that was covered with brush, shore pine, which has no value, and an area that was actually, in my own mind, environmentally degraded with motorcycle trails, and it really wasn't being sustained environmentally by the prior landowners. It was contributing to Coos County tax base approximately $500 a year because it wasn't timberland and it wasn't actually ag land. Now it's the largest contributor in property taxes in Coos County. Bandon Dunes grew from one golf course to the present 3, with the 4th going to be finished in June of this year. They employ over 500 full-time employees, and they have over 350 private caddies that work at Bandon Dunes. That's 850 jobs. And how many of you got 850 jobs out of one free enterprise investment? Not very many of us. All employees who work 30 hours or more are provided their health insurance. Employment has been in construction workers building the golf court complexes, 4 restaurants, 4 bars, marvelous overnight accommodation of 4 plexes, and individual rooms for over 280. Bandon Dunes construction was done with local contractors and local labor. The people in my district now have employment as cooks, waiters, waitresses, golf course keepers, sales, caddies, chauffeurs, and bus drivers. As many as 30 private jets per day use North Bend Airport, then commute to Bandon Dunes to play golf. 2 daily flights from Portland and 2 daily flights from San Francisco are designed specifically for golfers. The North Bend Airport, which was legislator helped fund in 2005, was both the good representative from District 9 and my priority bill that legislative session, and we worked hard and people understood it when we got it done. The need for the airport, and it was a $16 million investment, was supported primarily by the increased air traffic of both private and commercial planes coming to North Bend. Without that, I don't think we could have convinced you to vote for it at the time. Then there's the employment outside the city resorts that adds to the social economy. While at Bandon Dunes, golfers and their families also use the beaches, go fishing in our charter boats, shop in local businesses, eat in local restaurants. Of all the infrastructure products built in Coos or Curry County in the past 30 years, not one has even come close to providing the jobs during construction, and an even much larger number of ongoing permanent family wage jobs as Bandon Dunes has done. People from all over the world come to Bandon Dunes, 65% from outside the Northwest, which bring new money into Oregon. That's new dollars. That's not circulating dollars.
Representative Thatcher yields.
Many of these are from Asia and Europe, and these people don't come once. They come back probably once or twice a year once they've been there. They have 65,000 visitors a year at Bandon Dunes. Two national tournaments have been held at Bandon Dunes, the Curtis Cup, where women from Ireland, the U.S., and England come to compete, and the Mid-Am tournament. The movie titled Golf in the Kingdom is being filmed at Bandon Dunes right now. How much money and jobs did that bring to Coos County in Oregon, just having that film being done there? What would we lose if we didn't have it? This is a public golf course where everyone is welcome. Fees are high in the summer when there's a lot of demand, lower in the winter. You can go there now to celebrate Oregon's sesquicentennial, where any Oregon can come, spend a couple nights, do two rounds of golf for $300. Mr. Kaiser, who built Bandon Dunes, contributes $400,000 each year to Oregon Community Foundation for charities. He provides $150,000 last year for high school graduation scholarships. Colleagues, how many of you would like to have 850 new family wage jobs? How would you like to have business provide $150,000 each year to your school scholarships? And how many would you like to have business in your district provide $400,000 for your charities? If you vote yes on House Bill 2227, you may very well prevent a destination resort like Bandon Dunes from ever coming into existence. You will prevent the income tax that's from the employees. You will prevent the paid property taxes, the whole $400,000 for charities, and you'll prevent the $150,000 for scholarships. I'm not certain why we would want to do that or give this type of authority to an agency that has not proven itself, in my mind, to be credible in the decision process that it makes. I ask for your no vote. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Kenemer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I had the privilege of spending the last 12 years as a county commissioner in Clackamas County, a county of about 1,600 square miles that ranges all the way from densely urban to every variation there on to literally wilderness areas. Most of us are familiar with Government Camp and the villages at Mount Hood of Welch's, Brightwood, Wimmy, Rhododendron, and Zigzag, and their importance to the economy, their importance to livability, and their access to the ski resorts. That was a huge challenge. And I remember as we also looked at consideration of a new resort at Welch's, and there were talks in a different county of one potentially at Mount Hood Meadows, how immensely difficult those standards currently are. My view in reading the bill is this will make that local decision even more complicated and involve even more time, and I therefore I'll not be supporting the bill. Thank you.
Further discussion. Representative Girard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
For all the reasons so eloquently put forward by my colleagues this morning, please don't do this to rural Oregon. From the home of the Running Y Destination Resort in Klamath Falls, I urge a no vote on this bill.
Further discussion, Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Earlier, there was one more question on my list of prepared questions that my friend didn't get to, so I thought it was a good one. Do you have any tourism or recreational development plan for your district? Because my district is urban, the most exciting thing going on is we're ripping down the state hospital. And I would be happy to get blankets and sit across the north side of Center Street if anybody wants to join me, because it is sort of entertaining. But what I do want to talk about is the different methods of doing destination resorts. My friend from the South Coast talked about Bandon Dunes. Bandon Dunes was built not using this method. It was built recently by Coos County, commissioners approving an exception to the land use rules. This method, 197 method, has no effect on the ability for places to build things like abandoned dunes because they didn't use this method. The people who live in my district, some of them go up to Brighton Bush Hot Springs. Apparently, some of them take their clothes off when they go up there. I've never been. I don't know. What I can tell you is on Friday in the newspaper, there's an article called Brighton Bush Gets to Grow. Marion County Commissioners Wednesday green-lighted expansion plans at the Brighton Bush Hot Springs Retreat. The unanimous action cleared the way for long-range growth expected to double the number of overnight guests at the Forested Resort. Again, not using the 197 method. They went to their county and applied for a conditional use permit. So what we're talking about is one method developed in 1987 to build destination resorts. Many other expansions or golf courses have been built using other methods. So this is just one method. And I really am pleased to hear the acknowledgement, because I often have heard issues of local control, acknowledgement that in the statute itself, it says, the siting of destination resort facilities is an issue of statewide concern. If counties are interested in county methods and not using the statewide concern method, they can use the exceptions process, they can use the conditional use process as I just described. Now, I was at all the hearings that the Land Use Committee held, and then I was the chair of the Destination Resort Subcommittee during the interim. I have become persuaded myself personally that this statute often leads to gated communities that aren't tourist-oriented. I attempted to go to one of these communities and come in. Because I didn't own a home, I was stopped at the gate from being able to come inside. So I believe that there are resorts that have been built, ironically, not using this method. Salishan, Sun River, Skamania Lodge in Washington, those are all the kind of places we want to promote. This statute has gotten awry to become opportunities to just have a subdivision. In many cases, the overnight lodging is never built. It's just bonding, and then the counties are stuck trying to get them to eventually build the overnight units for the tourists to come in, but the homeowners are taken care of. So this bill is pretty mild. It really is, for the most part, a study bill on everything other than the irrigation districts and the fire language. And then LCDC can make changes based on what the results of their findings are. With that, the final piece I wanted to comment on was I was very moved by the citizens from North Klamath County who came. That's why I took the opportunity to bring LCDC up and make clear nothing in this bill would affect them or anybody like them who already has a submitted application for a destination resort. If someone doesn't have a submitted application, and there's a farmer from Central Oregon, Matt Cyrus, who's talked to me, this bill won't even end up affecting him because he told me I'm just going to submit my application before this bill takes effect next January. So it's a mild step in looking at this one provision of land use law that deals with destination resorts. The other methods of building destination resorts that build abandoned dunes that are expanding Brighton Bush, not covered by this bill. I thank you for your time and attention, and I'm pleased to vote aye on House Bill 2227.
Further discussion, Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, this bill, I would like to have some clarification to each and every one in this chamber. Let's talk about this work group, or work groups, plural. The first work group, five of us out of eight did not know of its existence. The second thing is, only after we'd raised the question were we actively engaged in this. Now, looking at this bill, there are some things in here that you need to think about, or we need to think about. If you do go to Section 6, Line 34, it talks about a destination resort, and it says the county shall require that a destination resort do the following: avoid or mitigate direct or indirect adverse effects on state highways, county roads, and city streets. My interpretation of that is we've created a one-trip threshold. How far does that extend? No one can answer that. What means mitigate? I've been told that mitigate and minimize mean the same thing.
but it does not, folks, in land use. It is different. When you mitigate a vernal pool like we have in southern Oregon, you recreate it elsewhere. That's mitigation. When you minimize it, I don't know what you do with it then. You drain it? You fill it full of water? I'm not sure. But it's definitely different. The other thing is, on line 38 and 39, it says, provide for workforce housing on-site or off-site for individuals working at the resort. That is a statement that we all can understand. You will provide it. There's no if it's in the community or whatever. You will provide it to the employees. What kind of a cost are we going to incur upon the destination resort when now we have to house everyone, even if they live within a community that's close? Do we have to pay the rent? That's a question that has not been answered. Colleagues, we spend $10 million a year in this state to entice people to come here with tourism. Where are we going to go with them? What are they going to do? So now we're going to make it more difficult for us to have places for them to come? I mean, we've lost a lot in this state. Now we're about to start decaying our tourism. Bad bill. Hope you do not support it.
Further discussion. Representative Wingard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
To the bill. Colleagues, this bill is a stark reminder of the tale of two Oregons. I'm going to read some facts about the conditions in this state right now. Not everywhere, but in some places. 20.7% unemployment, 20.5% unemployment, 18.9% unemployment, 18, 18, 17.5, 16.7, 16.1, 16.1, 15.8% unemployment. That wasn't Multnomah County. It wasn't Clackamas County, it wasn't Lane County, it wasn't Washington County. It was Crook, Harney, Jefferson, Grant, Douglas, Lake, Klamath, Deschutes, Josephine, and Wallowa. What do they have in common? It's rural Oregon, colleagues. It's rural Oregon. And it desperately needs economic activity. It has needed that for a long time. A long time. And unfortunately, with the passage of this bill today, the people of rural Oregon are going to have to keep waiting. Regardless of what you're hearing about how wonderful this bill is, let's ignore the happy talk. It will reduce economic activity in rural Oregon. That we could do this in the best of the times is unconscionable. That we're going to pass this bill in the middle of an economic recession, which we have not seen in decades, where nearly one in five Oregonians in the rural areas are unemployed, is beyond belief. And today I am happy that we are broadcasting these hearings online so that people all over the state of Oregon can watch it, because I think rural Oregon and the people who live in rural Oregon need to be watching today and thinking very carefully about their relationship with this legislature. About 25 years ago, the environmental community, with the help of some, began shutting down the mills in this state, most of them in rural Oregon. At the time, the people of rural Oregon were told, "Don't worry, you'll have tourism." I think we now understand that that was a lie. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, we've heard a lot of information here this morning. I'm going to be very brief. I want to talk about four things. One is the work group issue. Two is a mapping issue that you've heard reference to that I think is an important piece of that missing. Three is the fiscal, which we have not had much discussion on. And four goes back to the idea of local control versus statewide issues. On the work group issue, during the hearings that were held here in Salem, no testimony was given by a water district. No water district requested to be a boundary line for this bill. And importantly, within water districts, no property owner who does not take advantage of irrigation within the water district asked to be included. Colleagues, I would ask yourselves how this bodes for future development of water districts around the state of Oregon. If your property would be proposed to be within one of those water districts, even though the property was not irrigated, you could have a negative effect and a reduced ability to use your property as you see fit simply by being included in this water district boundary. It is arbitrary, and it simply should not be there. The second issue that we heard about, and you've seen in a letter on your desk, related to mapping. The Association of Oregon Counties says that the mapping does not need to be changed. Colleagues, they and some of you may have missed the hearings where Jefferson County came and said, absolutely the mapping will need to be changed. These rules overlay on top of the water districts and will change the properties that could be used for destination resorts. We heard Director Whitman say that he would use the resources of the agency to help that county remap. If it doesn't take remapping, why would he do that? Why would he be offering grant help to that county because they need to remap? The fiscal, colleagues, the fiscal piece says this. Though it's not a ton of money, still where I come from, ODF&W says in excess of $106,000. But I think the more key issue within that fiscal is simply this. Department of Forestry, Department of Agriculture, Department of Transportation, and DLCD themselves all just said, we're not really sure what it's going to cost. But the key words to me within that were, we may return to the emergency board for additional funding if this creates more work. Colleagues, if you don't know what it's going to cost when you start doing this kind of thing, and we're in the fiscal trouble we're in today, how badly do you want four or five agencies coming back to the emergency board asking for additional funding because of the work that's created? Finally, colleagues, I want to read a couple of the quotes out of this bill, and I want you to ask yourselves, does this promote local control? Does this help our local governments or local entities stay within that realm? Or are we overtaking legislatively what they might otherwise continue to be able to do? The passage of this bill would establish for DLCD to refine destination resort policy without legislation, modifies or repeals statutes that have prohibited LCDC from making refinements to destination resort planning policy without legislation. And finally, colleagues, if you don't think you've heard enough about Measure 37 and Measure 49 claims, how about this one? Limits legal basis for claiming compensation for regulations restricting use of property by declaring that destination resort is not residential use of private real property. So, folks, if your map or your property falls within this map, we're just going to say you've got a limited legal basis. Colleagues, you heard some countywide unemployment numbers. You should know that the state of Oregon just exceeded 12.1% today. This bill does not promote job growth. Please vote no.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Nolan, do you wish to close?
I think I better, Mr. Speaker. Yes. I'd like to thank my colleagues for a robust debate today. I think it's very helpful for people to look carefully at legislation and to look carefully at the process by which it gets to the floor. Thank you all for being engaged and for your comments on this bill during the
hearings and work session as well as here this morning. But I need to clarify a few things because I think there's been some confusion about this bill. Most importantly, this bill is prospective only. It does not have a specific effective date. That means it is effective as every other bill that has no specific date on January 1, 2010. Nothing in this bill takes anything away from existing resorts. Nothing in this bill takes anything away or changes any rules for resort proposals that are already in the process. We are looking forward only. I think that's something that has been missed in the debate. My good colleague from District 7 referred earlier to a section of the original bill that is no longer in the bill in front of you. The original bill did indeed exempt this procedure from Measure 49 claims, but that was an amendment that Representative Wingert proposed to the committee and was incorporated in the Dash 10 amendments that were adopted into the bill. That language has been removed from the bill. So be very clear about that. That language, at the recommendation of the good representative from Wilsonville, has been removed from the bill. And as I mentioned earlier, the good representative from Medford made six specific suggestions, I think on his own behalf, but also on behalf of other people who are interested in this bill. And we have incorporated four of those into the amendment that went into the bill. So I'd really like to call your attention to the fact that we have worked hard to hear the concerns and issues and suggestions of all the members of the committee and incorporated many of them into the final amendment that went into the bill. I hope they didn't miss that in the process, but those have been incorporated. Finally, I think we've come to an interesting place where we bring you a bill on a split vote that creates more flexibility for local communities to control their own destiny, more opportunity for counties to have the leeway to take care of their own economic needs. And interestingly enough, a bill that stands up for two significant parts of Oregon's economy, the agricultural sector and the forest products sector. And if you were just coming into this debate at this moment and you heard that information about this bill, I think you'd think that it was completely flipped around. You'd kind of be scratching your head and you'd say, a Democrat from Southwest Portland is bringing a bill that protects agricultural jobs, that respects the hundreds of farmers and ranchers who came and testified to us and wanted protection for their ability to continue farming, to produce product, to employ Oregonians, to husband the land. That would be a bit unusual. And that you would have a representative from Southwest Portland, a person in whose district there are no destination resorts, come to you and talk about supporting tourism in our poorer counties because we want to give them, not us, but them, the opportunity to control their own destiny. Colleagues, I really encourage you to understand the bill for what it is, an opportunity to open up this process and an opportunity to tell Oregonians, and particularly our natural resource industries, that we stand with them, that we will protect their ability to continue working the land, building their own wealth, employing their neighbors in jobs that are sustainable, responsible, and tethered to the land. We can have both of those. This is a bill that allows us to do that. And I encourage you to join me in supporting it. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Wingert, how do you vote? Wingert votes no. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Beyer votes aye. Representative Witt, how do you vote? Witt votes aye. House Bill 2227A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2184, relating to beverage containers.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2184A. Representative Cannon.
Mr. Speaker, I move House Bill 2184 be re-referred to the Committee on Environment and Water.
Representative Cannon moves that House Bill 2184 be re-referred to the Committee on Environment and Water. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's come to our attention that there is a problem with the bill, particularly as it relates to the fiscal. We'd like to get it back into committee to do some additional work with full expectation that we'll be bringing a better bottle bill back to the floor soon.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Cannon, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that House Bill 2184A should be re-referred to the Committee on Environment and Water will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Schaffler, how do you vote? Schaffler votes no. The motion, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. So, colleagues, in the interest of time, we're going to be holding other bills over until tomorrow. We have a very lengthy set of bills already scheduled to be on third reading tomorrow, and we will be adding a fair number with this, so I encourage you to be here in a timely way tomorrow. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended, that the bills remaining on today's third reading of House bills calendar be carried over to their proper place on Tuesday, April 14th, 2009's third reading calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Final reading, memorials, and resolutions. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended in consideration of H.J.R. 37 be made a special order of business immediately following the order of business of special committee reports on Monday, April 20th, 2009's calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 66 related to criminal record checks requested by Department of Education. Senate Bill 113 related to accreditation of post-secondary schools. Senate Bill 400 related to shellfish. Senate Bill 444 relating to hazing. Senate Bill 625 relating to Ewing Young.
Bills read for the first time were passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 63 relating to child development specialist program and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 75 relating to disability of the governor. Senate Bill 462 relating to eligibility for unemployment insurance benefits and declaring an emergency.
Bills read for the second time or passed a third reading. And colleagues, the chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and Senate Bill 30, which is the ethics reform bill, the reform of Senate Bill 10, the rules be suspended and Senate Bill 30 be read second time immediately. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 30 relating to government ethics and declaring an emergency.
That bill is now also read for the second time and passed the third reading. The chair also requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and consideration of that same bill, Senate Bill 30, be made a special order of business immediately following the order of business of special committee reports on Tuesday, April 14th, 2009's calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Third reading of Senate bills. Other business of the House, other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Democrats, please grab your lunch and join me immediately in the caucus room. Prizes for those who get there first.
Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Republicans, we will cancel caucus for today.
Effective immediately, I'm making the following appointment to the Task Force on Disproportionality in Child Welfare. Representative Mike Schaffler. Seeing no further announcements, remonstrances. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, in your email box today, you will find a press release from the Attorney General and the State Treasurer's Office announcing that following the three-month investigation that Attorney John Kroger has had into the Oppenheimer Fund, which managed some of our state's 529 college savings plans basically into oblivion, that John Kroger is moving forward and filing suit seeking $36.2 million in damages from the Oppenheimer Fund for misrepresenting how they were handling the funds of Oregon families who were saving for college. Morningstar just this past February gave the Oppenheimer Fund an F for failing to communicate the true nature of its investments to those who were invested in them. You will remember that the House Education Committee held hearings on this issue in January. I'm pleased that Oregon is the first state which will be pursuing this action and attempting to recover the funds that were lost for our families. Thank you, colleagues.
Further remonstrances. Adjournment, Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. Tuesday, April 14th, 2009.
Representative Jensen moves that the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. on Tuesday, April 14th, 2009. Without objection, the House adjourned.